This is Philosophy Bites with me, David Edmonds.
And me, Nigel Warburton.
Philosophy Bites is available at www.philosophybites.com. According to the dictionary, a question is an expression of inquiry that invites a reply. No figure in the history of ideas has been more associated with the question than Socrates, one of the founders of Western philosophy. He gave his name to a type of investigation through dialogue, the so-called Socratic method. His questions and truth-seeking so annoyed the Athenians that he was tried and found guilty of corrupting young minds. His punishment in 399 BC was death through drinking hemlock. Professor M.M. McCabe of King's College London submits herself to a rigorous questioning by Philosophy Bites.
M.M. McCabe, welcome to Philosophy Bites.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
We're going to talk about Socratic method. That's the method of Socrates. But who was Socrates?
Socrates was the ugliest man in Athens in the 5th century BC. He was grubby and fairly disreputable to look at, but demanding all the time of his interlocutors, of their attention. He caused some difficulties in Athens because he was always asking people deep questions about why they did what they did. And the Athenians, it turned out, didn't like that terribly much. They thought that somehow or other he was responsible for subversive elements in the state and that he was responsible in particular for some of the political difficulties that Athens was in at the end of the 5th century. So at the age of 70 in 399 BC, he was executed. He was given the hemlock drink, which killed him and left his legacy to the rest of Western philosophy.
And part of his legacy is the portrayal of Socrates in Plato's writings. Plato was one of his pupils and wrote superbly about Socrates.
That's right. There are, in fact, several different sources for Socrates' life. There's a ribald play by Aristophanes about Socrates. There's some rather hagiographic material by Xenophon. And there are other Socratic works, but the most important Socratic material is the collection of dialogues that Plato wrote in which Socrates was the main speaker. Works about his life and death, and in particular works describing his conversations with these unfortunate people who were trying to live their ordinary lives when Socrates called them to account.
And it's very important that we have these because Socrates himself didn't write anything down.
Wrote nothing. I think he was probably too busy talking. He supposed that what we should be doing is all the time asking questions of others and of ourselves about what it is we think about what we're doing and what it is to think about what we're doing. What he does is he'll meet somebody who's going to do something, for example. So there's a guy called Euthyphro who was an expert on religion. And Euthyphro, when Socrates meets him, is going to prosecute his father. And Socrates says, well, hang on a minute, are you sure you know what you're doing? And Euthyphro says, yes, of course I know what I'm doing. And Socrates' investigation is in part about whether Euthyphro is right to think about what it is he's doing as the right thing to do. But the most significant thing about his discussion with Euthyphro is his investigation about what it would be to know such a thing. What sorts of claims do you make when you say, I know that prosecuting my father is the right thing to do? So the discussion works always at that double level.
This kind of discussion is actually an example of what we call Socratic method, where Socrates meets somebody, challenges their assumptions, and through asking difficult questions, teases out just how little they know.
Exactly. What he's trying to explain to us is not only how little they know, but how little they understand about what it would be to know something. What we understand as the Socratic method is this business of questioning all the time. One has to think about the logic of it as well, that some of the central features of its logic are that what you're looking at when you're looking at somebody's position is a series of views that they hold. It's not a question of investigating a single proposition and working out whether it's true or false. What Socrates is trying to do is to see how everything that they believe fits together. Now, you can see how this makes the Socratic method a very complicated and deeply controversial process, because what you're doing is asking people the most extraordinary, impertinent questions about what they really think.
And a lot of people found him intensely irritating because of that.
Well, they killed him. They'd had enough of all of this. And so they said, well, let's bump him off.
At the heart of this Socratic method of scrutinising ideas is actually not this solitary, thoughtful individual in a library somewhere, but he's out there in the marketplace talking to people.
That seems exactly right. He thinks that you can have a conversation with no holds barred and find things out that way. There's no suggestion in what he says that somehow or other we're stuck inside our heads and can't do things collaboratively or collectively. He doesn't treat of any problem about other minds. He doesn't suppose that I'm limited to my own subjective experience. He supposes that these conversations genuinely are collaborative activities. It is genuinely possible to find things out together. And I think from a modern perspective, we're inclined to think that's a bit overstated, inclined to think that he's being ironical, which people often say about Socrates. Oh, well, you know, he says he wants to talk with his friends. He doesn't really mean it because he knows he's a clever clogs and they're really stupid. That's not right, it seems to me. I think one should read what Plato has him say on its face and take him to be saying that these question and answer sessions are mutually illuminating.
Are these conversations good because they lead to knowledge, or are they somehow intrinsically good because they're conversations?
Some people think that Socrates was the original consequentialist, which supposes that what knowledge is really for is being able to calculate where your good best lies, and so to be good at practical reasoning. If you just think about the literary context of that, it's an extremely implausible view of this ugly, scruffy old man wandering about with no shoes on. And in fact, I think it's a mistake to see him as thinking that knowledge is just a practical, productive art or skill. Instead, I think the way to think about Socrates is by means of his own dictum, which was that the unexamined life is not worth living.
What does Socrates mean when he says the unexamined life is not worth living?
First of all, think about it as a life. So what he's asking us to consider is a whole life, not a collection of goods that we might gather together one day or the next. So the focus is away from individual pieces of practical reasoning. Secondly, when he thinks about the unexamined life, two ways of understanding that. One of them would be that you are examining the life. And the other way of thinking about it is that it's the life of examining. And what Socrates is interested in is the life that is doing the examining. And it's that process of constant questioning, making sure that your principles of reason and your processes of reasoning are honest and consistent, fit together, and are things for which you're willing to be responsible, that makes the centre of the life that he thinks is, in the third place, worth living.
Does that mean then that all you need to do is go around questioning all the time to lead a good life?
It would be depressing, wouldn't it? Because you'd end up then a solitary, probably. And Socrates is not committed at all to that. It doesn't follow from what he says about the examined life that the examination is all there is to a life. He's quite able to say that the examined life can be the central explanation of what makes this a good life without its being all there is to the good life. So you can have friends and love and even all sorts of other more frivolous things and it still be the examined life. This goes down into the tradition as the question of whether the wise man or the virtuous man, as he's now going to be, is happy on the rack. Socrates doesn't need to be committed to that. He just needs to be committed to the idea that, supposing you've got two chaps on the rack, one's a wise one and one's not a wise one, the wise one's going to be better off.
That's really interesting. There's this ancient injunction, know thyself. And you might think that the implication is you have to introspect, go away into the wilderness and think about your life apart from other people. But for Socrates, it's an essentially social activity.
I think that's right. Supposing you tried to work out what it is to be reflective, you might think that, oh, well, what being reflective is wandering off into the wilderness and sort of worrying. I think what Socrates thinks being reflective is having a perspective on what you think that is detached so that you can look at, so that you can reflect on the things that you think, as it were, from outside. One of the ways in which you can do that best is actually in conversation, because what conversations do is provide you with these differences of perspective.
Socrates claimed that he had nothing to teach. Nevertheless, have we got something we might learn from Socrates today?
If Socrates thought we'd learnt something, he would still not have thought he'd taught us. But I think he was right about something. It seems to me that if we're involved in education at all, whether we're being educated or doing the educating, it's not only a good thing to do, but it's a fundamental feature of how people need to be educated. It doesn't constitute the whole of education, but it constitutes something at the core of what we might think education properly is. To discuss with people in this open-minded, open-ended way that allows them to reflect on what they think and us to reflect on what we think, without telling, without dogma, without insistence and without imperative, to ask people to think about what they really think. And what that asks them to do is, if you like, to be true to themselves, asks them to be sincere about their beliefs and asks them to be honest about how their beliefs fit together. It also asks the interlocutor to have some respect for the person they're talking to. And I think perhaps that's a lesson that we do rightly learn from Socrates.
What are the implications then for you, as somebody inspired by Socrates, teaching within quite a constraining university curriculum?
The standard ways that we have of teaching in universities are ways that Socrates wouldn't recognise. So what about the lecture? It's actually very hard to lecture Socratically. Socrates wouldn't really approve, well, he certainly wouldn't approve of examinations in the contemporary sense of examinations, because they suggest that there's a right answer and a wrong answer, and I don't think he would think about it in those terms, even although he doesn't deny that there's truth and falsehood. He wouldn't like bite-sized, if you'll forgive my putting it that way, courses. He wouldn't think you could start here and finish there and get it right about metaphysics. I think perhaps the way to think about it is this, that it's a model that one needs to bear in mind all the time. It keeps you honest just a little bit. It stops you from thinking, oh yeah, it's easy, you know, I can go and give a few lectures and then I've done my job. Especially in philosophy, that's not what doing your job looks like.
Would you describe yourself as Socratic?
I wish I was, I'd like to be, but it's very hard.
Emma McCabe, thank you very much.
Thank you very much for having me.
And you can hear more Philosophy Bites at www.philosophybites.com.